You're listening to Pod Catalyst, the official podcast of IABC, where communicators from around the world tell their stories. Let's get started with today's episode. Welcome back to Pod Catalyst. I'm Kristen Frankevich, IABC Content Manager. Before we get started today, I wanted to share that this episode and the next few will highlight speakers featured at the IABC World Conference taking place in Chicago, June 23rd through the 26th. The team is looking forward to the event, and we want to give you a sneak peek of what's to come. Today's episode features keynote speaker Oscar Munoz, who will kick off the event with his session, Leadership is an Act of Extended Storytelling, which is a fireside chat and town hall. Oscar is the former chairman and CEO of United Airlines, and after an extensive listening tour, he helped the airline make a huge turnaround in employee satisfaction, customer loyalty, and financial success. I had such a great time talking to Oscar. I found that he has a really refreshing, human-centric approach on navigating change and disruption, and I think you'll really enjoy this episode too. If you're looking for more information on Oscar, his presentation, or just the conference in general, you can visit our website at wc.iabc.com. We'll put that in the show notes as well. One last note is you'll also start to hear a few different voices on this podcast. Peter has passed the mic to me for now, and from time to time, you'll also hear from a few guest hosts. All right, let's get started with the show.
Hi, my name is Oscar Munoz, and I'm the recently retired chairman and CEO of United Airlines, and now a full-fledged advocate of failing the concept of retirement. And from my perspective, I think communication creates transparency and therefore trust, and a critical part of engaging with other humans, both on a personal and a business level.
Well, Oscar, thank you so much for joining us today. Excited to have you here.
Oh, it's wonderful. And I can't wait for the event.
So let's get started with the conversation. During your tenure at United Airlines, I know you put an emphasis on listening to and empowering your employees. Given the challenges that the company had seen prior to your joining, I want to learn a little bit more from you. What did that first year or so of the listening exercise look like? How did you learn to build trust with your employees over time?
You know, the instinct we all have, and, you know, corporate communication professionals like all of you understand this better than others. But, you know, for context, the United Airlines that I took over was anything but United. We had a merger that had stalled. We had had 8 CEOs in the previous decade. Our performance metrics were in tailspin. You know, investors, customers, and particularly employees were very much not in support of the company. And so my instinct was to go find out why. It's exactly rather than what everybody was telling me. And I quickly learned that they were disenfranchised, disengaged, and disillusioned. That is a quote I used in my first Wall Street Journal article when they said, hey, what are you finding out there? And that's, of course, that got big headlines. And, you know, shouldn't the board have known about this? Because I was previously on the board. And so I found all those things. So, you know, in order, what I learned in talking with individuals is my sense was we had lost the trust. As one employee put it so poignantly, she says, I'm just tired of always having to say I'm sorry. Meaning she was a flight attendant and right, the plane's late. She has to apologize, but it has nothing to do with that. The coffee sucks. Again, no decision on her part. She just has to serve it. So, you know, you have 80, 90,000 employees around the world always having to say a sorry. That's where the trust had eroded. And so the concept of going out and listening and getting that information was the most important part for me because, as you all know, in that genuine listening and learning from people, you engage people in the journey and they felt like they were part of it and somebody was part of it. So that was the way we did it in the first year. It was difficult. I was interrupted a little bit because I had this heart attack and eventual heart transplant event that kind of get in the middle of it, but we jumped right into it right afterwards.
Yeah, and that part about your story is fascinating and quite inspiring.
That's a whole other podcast.
Right. So you started that, you embarked on this listening journey in 2015, which is almost 10 years ago, right? And while some things, some core concepts of good listening certainly remain the same, in many ways, the world we're in today is very different.
Vastly different.
Yes. Right. So I would love to hear from you when it comes to employee engagement, what do communicators and leaders need to think about that maybe wasn't something they were considering 10 years ago?
Well, 10 years ago, for sure, right? The concept of social media has changed the relationship between everyone and certainly between employers and employees. absolutely between customers and brands, and then, of course, the general public and institutions, which we see all the time. And when you're an airline where you have 180 million people flying, they have a chance to opine in a whole different vehicle and publicly that everyone has. And it's what I would call now a two-way conversation, right? Before, people could complain, nobody saw it, and your response was also like, but of course, this has taken on such a big thing. And again, and unless you participate in that conversation with authenticity and genuine sort of desire, social media will steamroll you and, you know, it's hard to recover. And we had a terrible event that everyone knows about on one of our planes when a customer was dragged and beaten off an aircraft. And my initial response and all of it, we just weren't sophisticated enough to understand what Twitter then, what X now was. And in our rapid, you know, we didn't have a rapid response unit. And so we reverted as a team between CorpCom, between the lawyers, to this kind of standard old fashioned defensive posture, standard book that we've used forever in a world where information was traveling so quickly and so broadly, right? There is rumors that there were 800 million views of that video on Weibo in China. So I became instantly infamous globally. And then, of course, you know, the way you recover from those things is once you sat down with everybody and took away all the corporate pablum that everyone was suggested and you put your genuine heart into it, for lack of a better term, you know, I owned up to it and took the responsibility for all of that. And that was another mission that, you know, we always say that it's never too late to do the right thing. And again, in this particular case, I think it was the most positive thing because, you know, we spent a couple of weeks of really, really difficult situations, but we were quickly to be able to get past, take ownership, provide a plan, enact it, and then, you know, simply apologize and talk to everyone. And, you know, you think about situations that are going on today. You know, Boeing is probably one of those examples where, again, it's a wonderful company, but this continuing cadence of negative things that are just being pinpointed to them, that's what can quickly happen to a large brand. And so having to reimagine how you engage and communicate with your customers or your employees was a big critical thing. And again, back to your question, it's very much a two-way. Everyone's involved and everyone has an opinion. And you have to be incredibly sophisticated about how you manage that.
Well, I think that leads nicely into my next question, talking about the communications aspect, right? I know you emphasize the importance of really putting those business communicators front and center during your time. And I would love to hear from you. What did that look like in practice? And what can other leaders and communicators learn from this strategy?
Well, I'm not presumptive enough that people are going to necessarily learn or that I have the best advice. I have a painful scar tissue from all of this and my commentary and my views. And I get called a lot from very senior people when they're in a crisis to, you know, kind of get my take on how we do that. But, you know, in general, and I wrote this in my book, leadership is an act of extended storytelling. You can't inspire people and motivate them through adversity and pain if work is just one thing after another and there's no sense of direction and there's not an arc of narrative around what you're trying to do. And then when bad stuff happens, it just, you know, nobody knows which way to turn. And so, you know, through words, you know, and then of course, backed up with action, something I call proof, not promise, you can help people understand that, okay, this is where we are. This is where we want to go. And this is what we all together have to do to get there. And then importantly, back to the listening tour, and in that message, it's explaining to you, the individual employee, how you play what I like to call a starring role in this transformation. And the old United was just lurching from one crisis to the next. And then so we were able to create, again, a concept of the new spirit of United, which was forged on the individual human beings that worked in this company feeling that spirit and owning up to it. It wasn't a tagline. And we had many taglines in the previous 10 years, by the way. One of them was be the brand, right? Be friendly, be this. And employees would literally throw that in my face with these posters that were everywhere. Like they literally wave it in my face and say, be the brand? Really? When you can't run your planes on time, when you can't get this, when you can't get that right, right? And so I invested in my team a huge amount of time developing thematics, ideas, phrases and stories, and I've used already a few of them in this process. If you walk around United today, they still use these things, listen and learn, proof, not promise, you know, those kind of things that are just important. Their words are not as meaningful as the meaning that they have to the people that utter them. And so, you know, and then how do you know this works? Well, there's many ways, right? Your employee surveys and our union agreements that we were able to solve. But for me, the first time a customer stopped me in the concourse and asked me to sign, we have these in-flight magazines where I wrote a note and a letter every month personally about what was going on. And when somebody asked me to sign it for the first time, I knew we were beginning to get through because your customers were sensing and feeling this concept of the new spirit of United. So long answer to your question. There's so many things, but you can, I hope, sense my excitement, my commitment, my full engagement on this concept of communicating, not just to the external folks in a way that you know, avoid legal issues, or it has to speak to the humans that work in your organization because they will reach out and capture the hearts and minds of your customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's that human element you just can't overlook, right? And that it really sounds like that was core to your strategy. Yeah,
well, core to the strategy. You know, part of it is, again, why I always say, I don't want to be presumptive about these things. That's me. That's who I am. I am that person that wants to reach out. It comes naturally to me. It does not come naturally to other people. And sure. To those folks, I always advise them. It's, you know, it's kind of like when people tell you to tell a joke before you start a speech. So, which is a great idea if you're a good joke teller. If you're not. And right. So if this kind of human connection doesn't make everyone comfortable, then don't do it because it'll be awkward. So figure out that way that connects with people. And again, whatever it is, it can't be disingenuous. It can't be third party. It can't be surveys. You know, people in the business that I ran required that kind of human interaction because they interact and right with you as a traveler. And so that worked for me.
Well, Oscar, I'm looking forward to your session at our World Conference coming up in Chicago this June. I know the format is going to be part fireside chat, town hall, so certainly an opportunity for dialogue. For folks listening who plan to join and plan to sit in on your session, I'd just love to hear, what do you hope attendees will gain? What are you looking forward to?
Well, what they'll gain is hopefully a ratification, a confirmation that what they do for a living is so gosh darn important and even more important in today's world. But we can't walk around and say it's important. We have to prove all our organizations, all the things that we do, we can't walk around and say, communication is important. It's right. We have to guide our leaders to understand the value of that. And so not just, hey, you need to go listen to people. Well, you know, done poorly, that's the worst advice you can give. So it's not about writing notes or writing memos or writing strategies. It's about really engaging, understanding your leaders and your their style, their human dynamic, and how do you best utilize that in this communication that, in my opinion, leads to this capture of hearts and minds that extends beyond your employees through your customer base. That's the important part that I hope people take away. Is it, again, a proof, not promise, right? I say all this stuff. I have proof because all you have to do is look at United's, you know, sort of arc with regards to its financial results, its NPS results, just the brand image that people have of them now versus what they did. All of that came from engaging these 800,000 people all over the world feeling as part of this and creating this new spirit of United. And so that's what I hope that people get. With regards to the town hall and questions, I say one thing and one thing only, bring it. You want to know how to get to global service? I can answer that. You can. You got to spend a lot of money. You want to talk about my failures? Read my book. It is almost as much about failures. I mean, in fact, there's very little, look at me, look how great I did. It is not one of those memoirs, in my opinion. It is really one that tries to, you know, back to your question, to not teach, but guide and give people examples of an approach that took place that worked and it can work. Leading with heart, leading with humanity, along with all the business stratagem that's obviously clearly important. I'm a perfect example, and our company is a perfect example of how that can work.
Yeah, the candor is inspiring, definitely. Yeah. So Oscar, my last question for you, and we like to ask all of our guests this, is what gets you up in the morning?
You know, it's interesting. I mentioned at the start of it how badly I'm failing retirement. But I don't feel that way. You know, when people ask me what you're doing, I say, I am busy, I am healthy, and importantly, I am happy. And what this new chapter allows me to do is to really engage in things that I've wanted to for a long period of time. You know, words like DEI and ESG have become bad four-letter politically divisive words. I believe in all of those comments and all those components of all of this stuff, but I try to project them in a way that's practical and logical. I'm not a big fan of begging people for on the DEI front, please hire people of color, please, you know, take care of women and pay them the same. I try to offer advice and facts and data that get an individual interested. It's like, ooh, I should do this not because it's a DEI thing, but it's a competitive thing. It's a business generation thing. I mean, underrepresented minorities in this country make up a huge portion of the buying power. So they're customers in growing numbers. Why wouldn't you pay attention to them? Sustainability, yes, it's green and it's the right thing to do. But in a world like aviation, where we burn a lot of fossil fuel, I've approached that not from the green aspect of that, but a different green, that volatility of fuel price wreaks havoc on the stocks of airlines. Imagine if we had an alternative fuel that was indeed sustainable, that had a price that was very consistent. What that would do for people's equity, their stock value, would be immense. And so that gets people attention. And it's not a green thing per se. That's kind of a political thing. It's a business thing. That is a win-win because it also creates, you know, a more sustainable planet for us, which I think we're all part of. So at the end of the day, you know, I lived in a world as a CEO sometimes, like, you know, especially early on with United, it's like, oh my God, what's wrong now, right? And everybody thought, it was like, oh, United, what's wrong? And we moved it to a kind of a fun phrase that's what's next, an exciting what's next. Like, ooh, what next thing are they doing? And you keep seeing that from United, which is the best legacy for someone like me, that a lot of that continues to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Oscar, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. It was certainly the most energizing part of my day. And we are so looking forward to having you at World Conference this June in Chicago. So thank you.
Well, again, it'll be so much fun. And again, I look forward to it. And thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Pod Catalyst, the official podcast of IABC. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Have a suggestion for a future episode? Send us a note at catalyst@iabc.com. To discover all IABC has to offer, visit our website at iabc.com. Until next time.